Good morning. This is Focus 580, our morning telephone talk show. My name is Jack Brighton, sitting in for your regular host, David Inge. Very glad you could listen. During this hour of the program, we'll have another conversation with one of the candidates for the U.S. Senate seat from Illinois being vacated by Peter Fitzgerald, who has decided not to run again. There are 7 Democrats and 8 Republicans in the primary for this U.S. Senate seat. During this hour of the show, we will talk with Barack Obama. He is a member of the Illinois Senate from the 13th Senate District on Chicago's south side, and he is one of the Democrats. He is a chairman of the Senate Public Health and Welfare Committee and also serves on the Judiciary and Revenue Committees of the Illinois Senate, and he will join us this morning by telephone to talk with you. That's the point of this program. We like to have these opportunities for listeners and voters to interact directly with the candidates. We think that's a very important thing for democracy, to have this kind of dialogue. And we will do that this morning with Barack Obama. As we talk with Senator Obama, we invite you into the conversation. All you need to do is call us around Champaign-Urbana. The number is 333-9455. We also have a toll-free line anywhere you hear us around the state of Illinois, actually anywhere in the U.S. via the Internet. If you're listening, you can use that line, 800-222-9455. And please do feel free to join us with your questions, since that's what this is all about. And just a brief background on Barack Obama. He represents Illinois' 13th Senate District on Chicago's south side. He is chairman of the Senate Public Health and Welfare Committee and also serves on the Judiciary and Revenue Committees of the Illinois Senate. Senator Obama graduated from Columbia University with a degree in political science and a specialty in international relations. He went on to Harvard Law School, where he graduated magna cum laude and served as the first African-American president of the Harvard Law Review. In addition to serving in the Illinois Senate, Barack Obama is currently a law professor specializing in constitutional law at the University of Chicago Law School. He's also served on the boards of some of Chicago's leading foundations and chaired the Chicago Annenberg Challenge, a $50 million philanthropic effort to reform the public schools. We'll talk about some of these things and, again, take your questions as we talk with Barack Obama during this hour. And Senator Obama, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Thanks. Very well. Thank you for joining us.
Good. Thank you for having me.
I wanted to start by asking you, I know you've been involved in community efforts in Chicago and a number of other activities, in addition to your resume as a member of the Illinois Senate and your academic background, if you wanted to talk a little bit about your experience working in the community there.
Well, usually the first thing people want to know is, where did I get this name, Barack Obama? And people mispronounce it and call me Alabama, and there are all kinds of variations to it. My father was from Kenya, from Africa, he was a foreign student who came here to study back in the early 60s. My mother was from Kansas, which is why I talk the way I do. And it's actually community organizing that brought me to Chicago. I had graduated from Columbia University in New York and had become interested in figuring out how I could help rebuild communities that had been devastated by job closings or were hurting because of long histories of segregation. And there were a group of churches out in the far south side of Chicago here that were dealing with steel plants that had closed and were trying to figure out how they could help rejuvenate communities. So they didn't have much money. All they could afford was a 23-year-old kid who was interested and was willing to work hard. Mm-hmm. So I came out here and worked for 3 years setting up job training programs for the unemployed, organizing parents to help promote school reform in the area, bringing resources and city investment into areas that had been neglected. And so I did that for 3.5 years before I went to law school, and it was the best education I ever had. It really taught me that ordinary people can do extraordinary things when they're given the opportunity.
Mm-hmm. So the other basic question I have, and then I want to defer to callers as much as possible, since that's what the show is all about, what do you hope to bring to the U.S. Senate? What would you hope to accomplish there?
Well, you know, as I think you noted in the introduction, I've devoted most of my life to public service, certainly most of my adult life, both as a community organizer, then as a civil rights attorney, and most recently as a state senator. And I'm very proud of the track record that I've been able to develop in the Illinois Senate. You know, I helped to shape the Kid Care program that provides health insurance for children who don't have who don't qualify for Medicaid, but whose parents don't have health insurance on the job. I helped to implement a welfare reform program here in Illinois that's one of the least punitive, but one of the most successful in moving women into the workforce, primarily by providing them with daycare and transportation assistance and job training. I helped pass the Earned Income Tax Credit that provides tax breaks for people who really need it, people typically making $30,000 a year or less. And then this year really focused a lot on revamping our criminal justice system and passed the first in the nation videotaping of interrogations and confessions, the cornerstone of death penalty reform in the state. Mm-hmm. So I'm very proud of my track record at the state level, but I now think that this country is at a crossroads, both internationally and domestically. And the voices of ordinary working people are not being heard in Washington. They're being drowned out by special interests. I think we have an administration who sees its primary role as protecting the powerful from the demands of the powerless. And I'm hoping to give voice to the young men who are standing on street corners without vision and hope, and to families that are struggling to get by, and to seniors who are unable to get the medicine they need. Those are the people I hope to represent effectively in Washington, the same way that I believe I've effectively represented them in Springfield.
Very good. Well, we will talk more about some of the issues that you raised and also take questions from listeners. And we have a couple people waiting patiently, so why don't we go ahead and speak with them. We'll go first to someone in Urbana on line number one. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I should start out by saying I am a very committed Democrat, and I'm really pleased that WILL has had this forum. I know that Mr. Obama has been in the East Central Illinois area many times, but I've never been able to come out and meet with you. So this is a wonderful opportunity, and I want to thank WILL for doing this. I was listening yesterday to the Democratic presidential debates on MSNBC, and one of the things that almost all the candidates talked about was that this election in November was going to, and I know that you have to get through the primary first,
right,
but this election in November is going to be about getting people back to work, getting people the health care they need, changing the way we deal with our other countries that we interact with, and doing something for workers' rights both here and overseas.
Right.
And I wondered if you agree with those statements, and if you were elected senator, what would you be doing? Would you be following the lead of hopefully a Democratic president, or would you be in the forefront with your own legislation?
Well, I think that there is unanimity on the part of Democrats right now that Bush and the Republican Congress have not put in place economic policies that are helping working families. This has been the most fiscally irresponsible administration in recent memory. We have a $500 billion a year deficit, and that deficit is the result not of investments in infrastructure that would improve our long-term productivity or investments in education that would give our young people the opportunity to compete globally. They're really as a consequence of tax cuts to some of the wealthiest Americans. And I think that we have to reverse those policies, and that has to be a number one priority. I've been very specific on a couple of issues that I think we can address right away. On the issues of jobs, and I do think that jobs and economic security have to be our number one priority. We've proposed that we have to revamp our tax code because it currently really incentivizes a lot of the outsourcing that is taking place and that is harming not only our manufacturing base, but increasingly is taking away jobs in the service economy, high-paying jobs in areas like computer programming. So what we've proposed is that we close those corporate tax loopholes that currently allow companies, for example, to locate offshore and repatriate their profits at a lower tax rate than those who are producing goods domestically, and put all those incentives into companies that are doing the right thing by their workers and by their communities. We call it the Real Corporations Act, and what we say is that if a corporation is investing 50% of its research and development money in the United States, 90% of its workers are in the United States, it is providing benefits to those workers, then they should get generous tax breaks, their shareholders should get generous tax breaks, and those can be paid for by closing the loopholes that are currently benefiting companies that are sending our jobs offshore. I also think that we've got to renegotiate our trade agreements in a very aggressive way. And although all of us believe that free trade is important, we also have to recognize that we are out of balance right now, that our trade agreements and our relationship, for example, to China, which has been devaluing its currency by as much as 40% over the last several years to run up a huge trade deficit with us, that those are areas in which the United States government has to be looking out for and promoting American workers, and that's something that has not been happening. It needs to happen soon, and I trust that I'll be in alignment with the presidential nominee on the Democratic side in pushing for changes and reviews of our various trade agreements.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for the call. We're talking this morning with Barack Obama. He is a candidate for the U.S. Senate from Illinois, one of seven Democrats running in the primary for the seat being vacated by Peter Fitzgerald. We have one caller waiting and time for others if you'd like to join us. This is about dialogue, questions that you have for the candidate on issues that concern you the most. The number around Champaign-Urbana to join us, 333-9455. Toll-free anywhere you hear us around the state, 800-222-9455. We have a listener next on line number two in Urbana also. Good morning.
Mr. Obama.
Yes, sir.
Should you become nominated and then elected, what standing committees and standing subcommittees in the Senate would you like to serve on?
Well, that's a terrific question. You know, every freshman senator, I think, aspires to be on the Appropriations Committee because that's where the money is, and you know, it's like Willie Loman said, you know, that's why you go there.
Right.
Obviously, it's sometimes difficult to get that much sought after appointment, but I think that areas, those committees such as Appropriations, Finance, or Commerce, are all of great interest to me because they have a direct impact in terms of how the tax code is written and how our budgets are prioritized in Washington. And those are committees that where I think I can have an enormous impact on the issues that I just mentioned to the earlier caller, our ability to change our tax code to encourage employment and shore up our manufacturing base here in the United States. I'm also interested in the Judiciary Committee because as a constitutional lawyer, somebody who teaches constitutional law at the University of Chicago Law School, I am very concerned about the direction of the federal courts. George Bush's nominees, I think, have generally been ideologues out of the mainstream of American society, and that is one of the most critical functions that the Senate can play, is to make sure that our judicial confirmation process reflects our core values in terms of equality and justice.
With that in mind, can you comment on the talk about, I guess it was a duck hunting trip with Vice President Cheney and Justice Scalia, and I'll hang up.
Well, I think that for the listeners who aren't familiar with it, there is a case pending before the Supreme Court, and the issue is whether Dick Cheney can keep secret records of various meetings that he had with energy companies. They have those that information should be made public. A lower court has indicated that it should be made public. It's gone up to the Supreme Court, and Justice Scalia is, as a member of the Supreme Court, has a conflict. Apparently, he's a close friend of Dick Cheney's. He went duck hunting with him just a while back. It would be appropriate for Justice Scalia to recuse himself from this case. So far, he has declined to do so. Unfortunately, there isn't a higher court to appeal to than the Supreme Court, so this is one of those issues in which hopefully the other justices, particularly Chief Justice Rehnquist, are able to push Justice Scalia off this case. It raises the larger issue, though, and that is that we are probably going to have at least two or three Supreme Court appointments coming up in the next term. It is critical to have a president and a U.S. Senate that is going to ensure justices who will uphold the basic liberties and the basic values that we fought so long for. And I'm extremely concerned about, for example, protections of the woman's rights to choose if you have another 4 years with George Bush in a Republican-controlled Congress. I think it could, over the long term, undermine the civil liberties that we fought for so long.
Well, there's much more to follow up on there, but we have several listeners waiting, so we'll go on next to someone in Park Ridge on line number 4. Good morning. You're on Focus 580.
Hello, Mr. Obama.
Hello. How are you?
Yes. Hi. Fine. I pulled a paper, a clipping out of a paper a couple weeks ago, and it's from the Chicago Tribune. It says, "Firms fret as H-1B visa list fills up." And the firms are very worried about not getting people in from foreign countries on these H-1B visas. My understanding is that, actually from the article, it shows that it was the cap was lifted to 195,000, which is triple the original standard count that goes every year.
Right.
And I work with a lot of people that are engineers and educated people that a lot of them are not working in their chosen profession.
Right.
Because we have so many people coming in. And to me, the article starts out saying it's not even February yet. The H-1B visas are nearly gone. I mean, we have a lot of people in this country that need to work, educated people,
right,
that are being pushed aside for foreign people coming in. I'm not against having people of other nations working in this country. I think that's great. But I think we live here. We shouldn't have to go somewhere else to work.
Well, I agree with you. This is obviously the other side of the outsourcing issue that is also confronting people in your industries. We should have a policy in terms of granting these visas that says if there are jobs that cannot be filled by American workers, then it's appropriate to grant those visas. It has gotten so porous, the way in which these visas rules are implemented, that what's really going on right now is if a company can say it's going to be cheaper for us to hire a foreign worker, then a visa is appropriate. And that can't be the policy, because what that does is continually drive down the cost of labor for the corporation, which is terrific for them, but does not do anything for American workers. And this is an example, I think, of us not implementing policies appropriately and not striking the right balance. None of us would argue that if there are specialties in which American workers cannot fill those jobs, that we shouldn't allow workers from other countries to benefit from the skills that they have. But we have not been aggressive in terms of looking at this whole visa situation. I think it's something that needs to be done. I should say that long-term, we also obviously have to continually upgrade the skills of American workers. And that's part of the reason why our investment in education is so critical, and one of the reasons why it's completely unacceptable to me that the Bush administration has only barely made a dent in the declining value of the Pell Grant program and other educational grant and loan programs that would allow people to continually retrain and continually upgrade their skills. This competition is not going to be going away, whether it's through outsourcing or through foreign workers coming into the United States. And we've got to make sure that we are doing everything we can to invest in America's young people so that they are at the cutting edge of whatever industry that they're in, that they're getting the high-value, high-wage jobs that are in those industries. That's something that we're not investing in enough at the federal level.
I just say thank you. I just hope that this issue gets more attention.
It should.
I haven't heard it discussed by any other candidates yet. I'd like to hear more discussion about this in the campaign.
Well, I will tell you this, that you are not alone in raising these issues. As I travel around the state, it's striking the number of high-skill, white-collar jobs that are going unfilled by American workers and people who just a few years ago were able to easily find work and were in great demand are finding themselves unemployed for long stretches of time and ultimately having to accept jobs at a much lower wage. And as I indicated before, the federal government has to, you know, show the kind of concern and empathy for these workers that reflect themselves in our policies, but that we also have to make sure that we're providing these workers the skills and ability or the training that they need in order to continually upgrade those skills.
Okay,
so I appreciate you bringing this up.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All goodbye.
Right.
Thanks for the call. We are already almost in our midpoint here. We're talking during this hour, Focus 580, with Barack Obama. He represents Illinois' 13th Senate District on Chicago's South Side, and he is also one of the Democratic candidates in the primary for the U.S. Senate seat being vacated by Peter Fitzgerald of Illinois. And your questions are welcome. We have a couple people waiting and time for others if you'd like to join us. 333-9455 around Champaign-Urbana. Elsewhere, 800-222-9455. Next up, a Champaign listener on line number three. Good morning.
Yes, thank you. I'm glad to see that you seem to be somewhat focused on the tax system. To me, this is the most critical area that needs to be dealt with. I have been reading David K. Johnston's book, Perfectly Legal.
Great book.
Yeah.
It's for those of you who have not picked up that book, if you want to see how special interests have just poked holes all throughout the tax code in ways that are legal but contrary to the public interest, boy, that's a good book to pick up.
Well, the most appalling thing I find, and there are many appalling things, but that the surplus being currently paid into the Social Security system is basically being used to fund the tax cuts to the upper income brackets. And I know that this would be a tough battle, but how would you go about trying to remedy that? And I guess more generally, how do you see the Social Security system and how would you work with the provisions of the Social Security system to protect it and as well as to make it more equitable to the general populace?
Well, the first thing that we have to do is we have to, at minimum, roll back the Bush tax cuts for the top 1% of the income bracket, typically people making $300,000 a year or more. That costs us approximately $76 to $80 billion annually in lost revenue. And it's for people who really didn't need a tax break. You know, I'm certainly glad that we have so many wealthy people in this country, and I want them to continue to do well. But, you know, if you'll recall, all these folks were doing pretty well under the previous tax regime of Bill Clinton's. You don't remember a lot of wealthy people complaining about their lot in life back in the 90s when we had the old tax structure. This new tax structure has been a complete windfall for them. And as you said, it is eroding our fiscal position in a way that over the long term may threaten Social Security. So what we've proposed is that we roll back at minimum those tax cuts affecting the wealthiest Americans. Some of that money needs to be used for deficit reduction. We also need honest budgeting in terms of how we calculate the Social Security Trust Fund versus other spending in the federal government, because right now the ability of the federal government to run up large deficits and raid the Social Security Trust Fund is something that promises long-term heartache for people who are counting on those benefits. In terms of what we can do to strengthen Social Security, the most important thing is to set ourselves on a path of fiscal responsibility. We're not going to be able to reduce the deficit overnight, but what we shouldn't do is compound it by, for example, making Bush's tax cuts permanent.
Well, thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thanks very much for the call. Our lines are full, so we'll go right away next to a caller in Champaign County on line number one. Good morning.
Good day. I was very impressed with your talk that you gave on Martin Luther King Day here, particularly because it emphasized, you know, we're not in a situation of either or, it's both and. And this is regarding, I think, something that resonates with a lot of people, the idea that personal responsibility and community responsibility.
Absolutely.
Okay, it was very good. One thing, you mentioned the judicial role of the Senate. It was quite ironic that as I was listening to your talk, I was also monitoring the news and the announcement of the recess appointment of Judge Pickering went ahead on that same
right.
weekend, Martin Luther King weekend. He seems to have a penchant for doing that kind of thing.
Right.
But actually, these are just things that I accumulated while I've been listening. I also, Rehnquist has rejected a call from some senators to review Scalia and said it's unprecedented that they would do that in any official capacity. But I think that there's still possibly a chance that unofficially, the Supremes might.
Well, that's what I'm hoping. I don't think that there's going to be some official inquiry, but you do hope that the other justices have some influence on on their peer.
Right. They were trying to keep that duck hunting secret. So I don't know.
Right.
It seems like they might have known that they were. I don't know how they thought they would have not been found out. But
particularly because, sorry to interrupt, but I just think that we have to emphasize this is the same Supreme Court that put this administration into office. And you would think that they would be painfully aware of the appearance issue, and even if Scalia was completely objective on this particular issue, the mere hint that there might be some bias on the Supreme Court is hugely corrosive to the long-term authority.
Scalia and Thomas both had family ties to the Republican Bush campaign, so they might have actually been seen a need to recuse at that point. But what I actually wanted to ask you about was your support in the state Senate of the health justice bill, and to describe that a little bit and see how you might be able to, in your role as a U.S. senator, have something to do with how that might be implemented down the line. I'm thinking of the late Senator Simon's a role in attempting, I think along with Wellstone and a couple of other senators at the time of the Clinton imbroglio about health care. I don't know what to call it, really, because I found it not as sincere as it should have been. But Senator Simon's role was to say that if states individually want to try, you know, some other complete system to provide universal health care, that they should be allowed to do that with the Medicare and Medicaid money. And that might actually the best case scenario is that that could actually go ahead in some way, and some states could show that you can save a lot of money on overhead expenses and deliver a lot more health care efficiently by using another system, not even necessarily a single-payer system. But if you would talk about that a bit and expand on both your role at the state Senate and what you could possibly do at the U.S. Senate, I'd appreciate
sure.
it. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
The health care, along with jobs in the economy, are the things that are uppermost on people's minds. You know, when I came into office 7 years ago, people already had a concern about the 40 million plus who were uninsured. Seniors were already struggling to keep up with the ever-escalating cost of prescription drugs. Now what you're seeing, though, are people who have health insurance benefits on the job, seeing their co-payments go up, their premiums go up, their deductibles go up. I'm meeting families who are saying that they are going to cover their children but are not going to cover themselves. It is a full-blown crisis across the board, and I'm also meeting small businesses and large businesses that are unable to sustain the double-digit inflation that they're seeing in their health care costs. So I think we've got a terrific opportunity politically. What I've tried to do at the state level is to move a process forward to talk about how we provide basic coverage for all Illinois citizens. I was a sponsor of the Bernadine Amendment, which would amend the Illinois Constitution so that health care was a basic right for all Americans. We weren't able to get it out of committee. We continue to work on that. There is a bill pending currently called the Health Justice Act, which would insist that the state legislature move a process forward over the next couple of years to examine ways in which we could achieve full coverage for all Illinois citizens, and perhaps set up a menu of options by which we could achieve that, and then have an up or down vote on one of the or more than one of the proposals that were put forward. It is a difficult problem. It's not one that's going to be solved overnight, but it's something where we can make significant progress. And at the federal level, what I'm looking at is a very specific proposal that would provide health care coverage for all children who need it all across the United States, would allow 55 to 64-year-olds to buy into the Medicare system, and would continue to would recognize that we're going to still have significant employer-based health insurance throughout the country, but that we're going to have to provide subsidies to some companies and particularly unemployed workers who are in transition for their COBRA coverage in order to make sure that everybody has basic access to health care. We could do just the expansion of health insurance to all children for $37 billion. That's how much it would cost to expand the current KidCare program that I worked on so diligently here in Illinois. We could cover all children who currently are going without health insurance for $37 billion, less than half of what it costs for the Bush tax cut to the top 1%. And I think that if we can start with children and those persons 55 to 64 that are most vulnerable, then we can start filling in those holes and ultimately, I think, move in the direction of a universal health care plan.
Hope that gets the caller's question. We have several people waiting. And let me just briefly reintroduce our guest. We're talking with Barack Obama. He is a member of the Illinois Senate, and he is running for the U.S. Senate from Illinois in the primary. He is a Democrat and currently represents the 13th Senate District of Illinois, and would like to represent the entire state in the U.S. Senate. If you have questions for us, we have one line open currently, 333-9455. Toll-free anywhere you hear us, 800-222-9455. We'll go next to a listener in Peoria on line number 4. Good morning.
Good morning.
Yes.
I've not heard any discussion this morning yet about the undercutting of environmental protection. And I would like to have the candidate's views on that, please. I'll just hang up and listen.
Okay. Thank you for the call.
Well, thank you for bringing it up. I'm proud to say that 2 weeks ago I received the endorsement of the Sierra Club and the League of Conservation Voters, the two leading environmental organizations in the country. And that was based on 100% environmental voting record this past year here in Illinois and the work that I've done on a whole range of issues from sustainable energy to trying to retrofit our buildings so that they're more energy efficient. This has to be the worst environmental president that we have seen, dating back to before Teddy Roosevelt, I think. In most other policy areas, the Bush administration has at least made some pretense at addressing existing issues, even though they've typically not done much. This is an area in which there is no defense of the Bush administration's record. On issue after issue, whether it's gutting the Clean Air Act by removing those provisions that required fixing up power plants so that they're emitting less pollution, to drilling in the Arctic instead of trying to promote fuel efficiency in our cars and automobiles and wean ourselves off of our dependence on foreign oil, the Bush administration has been on the wrong side of the issues. And I think this is one of the areas where there's the starkest contrast between presidential, between Democrats, both at the presidential level and at the United States Senate level. We are in I think we are at a point, and I think many scientists agree, where if we don't take seriously issues like global warming and greenhouse gas emissions, and if we don't take seriously the need to reduce our dependence on oil and coal, then we're going to have problems. And so what I've specifically proposed, in addition to just strengthening those laws that are already on the books and that have proven themselves to work, is that we need to make aggressive investments in areas like alternative energy, fuel cells, windmills, solar power. Those are all areas not only in which we can improve the environment, but also we can bring about economic development in our communities. Just a quick example, if it would not take that much for the government to provide some small subsidies to for the use of windmills on farms all across the state. It would help farmers who would generate cash income by having a windmill on their farm. And in addition, it would be a clean source of energy that Illinois could benefit from over the long term. So I think this is an area in which there are a whole host of improvements that can be made, but we have to start with enforcing the laws that are currently on the books. And by the way, funding EPA, which is slated for a significant cut in dollars under the Bush administration's 2005 budget.
Very good. Hope that gets to the caller's question. We have several people waiting. We'll go on next to someone in East Moline on line number two. Good morning.
Yes, Mr. Obama, I have about four things I'd like to ask you about, and if any of them have been commented on, just skip over them because I don't want to waste time. But I'm concerned about this Ashcroft and the lack of privacy and civil liberties that may stem from some of the legislation that's been passed, and I'm wondering how you feel about scaling back some of that and certainly avoiding worsening it.
Well, with respect to the Justice Administration and the Patriot Act, I think that we have seen a significant assault on our civil liberties. There were legitimate changes that needed to be made in some of our laws after 9/11 to accommodate the realities of terrorism and the threats to domestic security. And I'll give you an example of something that was contained in the Patriot Act that made sense, and that was that we needed to shift and allow the use of roving wiretaps on phones. You know,
yes.
A lot of current law or law up until that point required or allowed only the tapping of land-based phones. And obviously, if we've got terrorists running around with cell phones, we want to be able to tap those as well. For the most part, though, it was a shoddy piece of legislation that was rushed through Congress right in the midst of the anthrax scare. And as a consequence, contained a whole series of provisions that violated a couple of basic tenets of jurisprudence, a couple of basic tenets of law that we always want to be mindful of. Number one, that a judge should find a probable cause or at least a reasonable suspicion before issuing a warrant for searches, seizures, wiretaps. Those provisions, in many cases, were violated. Number two, that when the government is investigating you and obtains your records, that at some point you should be notified about it so that you can defend yourself against these charges, particularly when it comes to U.S. citizens. And there were provisions in the Patriot Act that allowed, for example, the government to ask librarians about the books that you checked out without, and the librarian was prohibited by law from letting you know that the government had asked about those materials. Those are areas in which executive branch and a Justice Department can potentially abuse them in ways that I think run against the grain of our Constitution and the kinds of liberties we want to preserve. There are some other areas, though, that the Justice Department's been engaging in that don't have to do with the Patriot Act in particular, but are maybe even more frightening. Specifically, the use of the label enemy combatant against a U.S. citizen to arrest that citizen, place him in detention, and not charge him with anything, and not give him access to a lawyer. You know, the the principle of habeas corpus, that you can't be held without charges being brought against you publicly, you know, precedes the American Constitution, goes back to the Magna Carta. And John Ashcroft doesn't seem to be interested in that particular principle. You know, we have to be aggressive with respect to the war on terrorism. We have to greatly improve our intelligence. There are legitimate tools of law enforcement that we need to provide, but we have to make sure that we strike that right balance, and we have to make sure that we have a judiciary that's going to be reviewing what the Justice Department is doing and the FBI is doing and the CIA is doing to make sure that they aren't overstepping those bounds.
All right. Well, you're obviously well acquainted with all those concerns. What about the estate tax? Would you favor reimposing that tax?
Yes.
$1 million?
I would favor reimposing it. I would be willing to review, and I think we should look at statistics. You know, there have been a lot of numbers running around about the family farms and family restaurants and such that are given up because of the estate tax. We may need to make an adjustment upwards to accommodate inflation to make sure that small businesses don't end up being lost as a consequence of the estate tax. But the notion, for example, that Bill Gates or Sam Walton should not put money back into this country and invest it in the people of America, given everything that America has done for them, makes no sense. And in fact, they themselves have acknowledged that for the most part, it makes no sense.
Thank you. And my last question is, how do you feel about Bush's poor grammar? And how do you relate that to the fact that he went to Yale and Harvard, probably as a legacy? And is he just trying to play to the anti-intellectualism in this country? And is that an act? Or what?
I'm sorry, you know, I didn't catch the first part of the question.
Well, I say, how do you feel about Bush's poor grammar?
His poor grammar.
And the institutions he attended, I mean, is this guy just putting on an act?
Anti-intellectual
support or what?
I don't know. I mean, you do get a sense that George Bush really likes to pretend that he's not the son of privilege. And, you know, that's probably good politics for him. You know, I'm less worried about his grammar than I am about his poor policies. You know,
boys like him, they better be starting to worry about how some of his policies are eroding the middle class.
Well,
some of them still have a foot in.
I think that's right. I think that's
right.
I don't mind him, announcing good policies with bad grammar, but it's the policies that have been so destructive to the American people that I'd like to see reversed.
That's a good quote. So
thank you much.
Yes. We have a caller waiting. I want to just make sure, though, before we run out of time, to touch a little bit about international relations. I know it's a subject that you studied as an undergrad, certainly in political science at Columbia. How do you feel about the direction that the United States has taken in terms of foreign policy over the past few years? What would you hope to see different about that? And certainly we could talk about Iraq and whatever else you'd like to.
Well, this is an area in which I think there are some significant differences in the Democratic field for the U.S. Senate. I stood up publicly and unequivocally over a year ago to oppose the Bush war in Iraq. I did so not because I think that the world is not better off with. That was too many negatives. I did so knowing that the world would be better off without Saddam Hussein, that he was a brutal dictator and had terrorized his people for many years and threatened his neighbors. But because inspections were working, sanctions were working, there was no evidence of weapons of mass destruction that would cause an imminent threat to the United States, and there was no connection between Saddam Hussein and al-Qaeda. And I felt that our number one priority needed to be effectively prosecuting the war on terrorism. This was an enormous and hugely expensive distraction that has frayed our international relationships in all sorts of ways. This administration, I think, is unbounded in its arrogance when it comes to foreign policy, and that was on display before Iraq, the unilateral rejection of the Kyoto Protocol, rejection of the International Criminal Court, rejection of the International Landmines Treaty, a whole host of areas where we could strengthen international rules and norms and institutions, and thereby strengthen the long-term stability of the world. My hope is that the American people, having seen the questionable intelligence and the ideological nature of the Iraqi war, are going to be much more skeptical of a continuation of the unilateral approach that the Bush administration has taken. And I think the Democratic Party has to be aggressive in explaining how our long-term security rests on our ability to work with other nations to ferret out the sorts of threats that al-Qaeda represents, and also to promote the kinds of economic development and stability in other countries that is necessary for us to drain the swamp of that breeds terrorism, poverty, ignorance, lack of education, a lack of development for women in particular all across the globe. Those are all areas where I think we have to put much more emphasis.
Very good. We have a couple callers, so we'll go next to a listener in Urbana on line number one. Good morning.
Yeah, you said a lot of good things today. I'm Latino, so that when I think about illegal aliens, I also think about the U.S.'s long history of extra-legal activities in Latin America. Mm-hmm. But so let me ask you a what I imagine could be a difficult question, unless you've got your tap shoes on. What is your thinking? What is the thinking in your district about immigration and illegal aliens? And I understand that there might be a lot of hostility there. And how are your own opinions either leading or following those of your constituents?
Well, you know, I think that people are concerned about immigration in my district like they are all across the state. I think they're in part driven by misinformation. I think that there has been, particularly on the Republican side, an attempt to scapegoat undocumented workers as the cause of job loss in this country. That's not borne out by the evidence. It's not borne out by the statistics. What I do think is a legitimate concern is that we should have an orderly process for people entering the United States legally. And, you know, we do not have the kinds of security along our borders that would ensure that we can maintain that orderly flow. And oftentimes the people who are hurt and exploited the most are those who are desperate to come in from Mexico and take enormous risks and often deadly risks to get here. So I think that our overall immigration policy has to reflect two companion interests. One is secure borders. Number two is an acknowledgement that we do have 8 to 10 million undocumented workers in this country, that for all the talk, those persons are not going to be deported anytime soon. We don't have the resources for it, and we don't have the mechanism to find all those undocumented workers. What we need to do is to secure our borders and then provide some sort of stable process for those workers to move in a direction of long-term citizenship. And those pathways have not been presented right now, and because they haven't been presented, those undocumented workers are not willing to come forward. They're not willing to identify themselves. That poses long-term domestic security threats because we don't know who's in this country. And what it also does is it helps depress wages. And I do think undocumented workers in this country are depressing wages because they themselves are being exploited. They don't have the ability to unionize. They don't have access to the basic rights that are supposed to be provided to American workers. That's an area that I think we've got to work on. But we've got to give them some incentive to come forward. And the Bush administration's latest proposal that would tie their status being here in this country to employers is not going to give them much incentive because they'd know that they'd be deported in 3 years, and in the meantime they'd be completely vulnerable to whatever demands that their employers made on them. So this is an area that we're going to be wrestling with for some time to come, And I don't think there are easy answers to it, and people who try to demagogue it and exploit it for political purposes, I think, are doing all of us a disservice.
Well, I appreciate your answer. I hope your constituents are listening as well. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for the call. We're almost out of time. We have one caller waiting. We'll include them before we end here. This is a listener in Champaign on line number 3. Good morning.
Good morning, Senator.
Good morning.
Your comments about Justice Scalia, who is expected to uphold the highest court in being nonpartisan, are appreciated. But I have two questions kind of leading in the same direction. One, the recent Massachusetts Supreme Court deciding to redefine the marriage for the whole state and in effect at least for United States. You think it is appropriate, your personal opinion? And the second, the same way the mayor of San Francisco deciding to give the licenses for same-sex marriages by himself beyond going beyond state laws. Where do you think this, you know, I mean, some people call it judicial tyranny. I'm just quoting that, but do you think it's appropriate? I will hang up and listen.
Okay,
thank you.
Thanks so much.
Well, yeah, we're going through a big cultural shift around the issue of gay and lesbian marriage, and I think that it's an issue that is going to continue to play itself out over the next several years. We've already seen an enormous change in attitudes, I think, towards gays and lesbians over the last several years, and I think that's been generally a positive thing. I think the American people are decent people and are not interested in discriminating against persons just because of sexual orientation. I've been a chief sponsor of a bill here in the state of Illinois, Senate Bill 101, that would add sexual orientation to those provisions that prevent people from being discriminated against because of on the job or in terms of obtaining housing. I think that that's at the core of what America is about. I'm not in favor of gay marriage because I think that the concept of marriage has religious connotations for many people in many traditions. I am in favor of civil unions and making sure that gay and lesbian persons have the basic rights that all Americans enjoy, that they should be able to transfer property, they should be able to visit their partners in hospitals, they should not be discriminated against on the job. I think at the federal level we have to make sure that we re-examine policies like don't ask, don't tell, that prohibit essentially openly gay and lesbian persons from serving in the military. I can assure you that there are gay and lesbian men and women who are currently making enormous sacrifices in Iraq. The notion that we would somehow treat them differently, I think, does a dishonor to all of us who depend on those young men and women in our armed forces. So I think there are a range of changes that we're going to have to make, and I think that I can't speak for the Massachusetts court or the mayor of San Francisco. I can tell you that my long-term interest here is making sure that all Americans, black, white, gay, straight, Hispanic, what have you, are able to participate in our community and be part of the American dream.
That's a good place to stop, and we're going to have to do so quickly because we're out of time here, but I will tell folks that if you'd like to know more about our guest, you can look at his website, ObamaForIllinois.com. That's O-B-A-M-A. And our guest has been Barack Obama, running for the U.S. Senate from Illinois. Thank you so much, Senator Obama. Appreciate
your time. Really enjoyed it.
All right.
Thank you.